Hey there, everybody. It's me, Jake Mintz, alongside Jordan Schusterman. Slightly different intro today because this is a slightly different type of episode.
Yes, it is. We wanted to deliver some hashtag content over the holiday week, of course, between Christmas and Hanukkah and New Year's, when it's normally a quiet time, but we wanted to deliver something, and we are very fortunate to be joined on this episode by a very special guest, someone who was in the news last week. Carlos Rodon, not exciting. We didn't get Correa. I'm sorry. We only got Carlos Rodon. But fortunately, this is someone that we've been lucky enough to be friendly with for back to his time at NC State. And so he was nice enough to join us on the day after his press conference with the Yankees and kind of review, one of the biggest days of his life.
And a big thank you to Carlos because he did not get home to his spot in Indiana until very late on Thursday night because of weather delays and whatever. And he still woke up early in the morning, hopped on his bunker man cave video setup to chat with us. And we're thankful for that. We believe, we've known Carlos, like Jordan said, for a long, long time. And we hope that comes through in our interview. He is a shy cat, but we think we got him to open up a little bit. Yankees fans, we hope you enjoy. Baseball fans, we hope you enjoy. North Carolina State fans, there's some stuff in there for you as well. Let us know how you like it. Remember, you can email us at baseballbarbacast, barbcast@gmail.com. And we will have one more episode coming out later this week. But until then, enjoy this. Us and Carlos Rodon. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world about to talk to the most clean-shaven man in the entire state of Indiana. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and we are joined by the baby-faced woodsman, the left-handed pitcher from Miami, but not really, Carlos Rodon, the newest Yankee. Hello, how are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be a part of the Barbacast again.
It's a good place to start because, Carlos, it's been almost 8 years, more than 8 years since we last had you on the podcast. We last talked to you to talk about the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest in 2014. What's been going on? Anything going on since then? I mean, I feel like we should probably catch up.
What have you been up to?
You good,
man? Well, I mean, there's been 7 Nathan Hot Dogs Eating Contests since then, so there's obviously a lot to talk about.
But also not. I believe that Joey Chestnut won all of them.
Oh, I probably did. Whatever happened to Kobayashi, man?
Yeah, Kobayashi kind of fell off. Well, and while your career has had a lot of ups and downs, Joey Chestnut has remained champion the whole time.
A way better career. A Hall of Fame outlook for Joey. Still.
Still. He's still going. But Carlos, we are happy to be joined here by you today to talk one day after what I imagine was one of the longest days of your life in a good way, but one where you woke up in New York City and were introduced as a New York Yankee and ended in your rural home in Indiana after some complicated travel mishaps, which maybe we can get into. But let's start at the beginning. Like, yesterday was one of the biggest days, of course, of your life and career. So let's go beat by beat because, the average fan tunes in. They're like, oh, there's Carlos. He shaved, of course. He's a Yankee and all his family's there. But like, you experienced, you lived this.
Yeah. Like, okay. So you walk into the room at 10:09, right?
Is that what I did? All right.
You walk into the room at
it's 10:09. You're 9 minutes late.
Okay. I mean, that's Yankee world, baby. Nine minutes
late. So I walked what in time, at 10:09. Sorry.
What time was your alarm set in the morning?
So I woke up at 8:15, I think.
Okay.
I woke up at 8:15, and Ashley, being the mom she is just already is sitting on the couch with Willow curling her hair, and I'm like, oh, good morning, and they've been up for probably an hour. She's curling her hair, and Bo's just running around. Somehow I sleep through all that, maybe Bo was asleep, but it doesn't matter. Anyways, I jump in the shower, get my stuff going. She's like, hey, we're going to be late. And sure enough, we were late. She wasn't wrong. I was like, it's fine. We'll be there when we get there. But
I would
that's
argue
how it's kind of started.
It is an event that you could be late for.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess that kind of any event, it's kind of standoffish, right? Like, you're stuck up, but I wasn't trying to be late.
At the same time, like, they're not going to start without you. Like,
yeah, that's true.
You didn't have that advantage, right? Like, it was going to be about you there. And
yeah,
so,
but I didn't want to do that. Sorry, Yankees media, 9 minutes. My bad. Won't happen again.
I'm sure they've dealt with worse. I'm sure.
Yeah, Judge that was... Judge was 12 minutes late. So
okay, so I did. Well, I mean, he kind of can do that, being the captain. As long as, like, not as late as him, I'm good with it. In 3 minutes, I'll take that gap.
Carlos hit 0 homers last year, so he had way less wiggle room.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Judge could have been 63 minutes late, so that's fine.
62.
Whatever. It doesn't matter.
It's more than Carlos.
He's more than me.
All right, so you show up, you come to the stadium, and the first thing that I noticed, so I was in the room, the first thing that I noticed was your daughter, Willow, was rocking one of the most spectacular outfits I have ever seen. Willow is how old, Carlos? 4?
3.
3 years old. Yeah. And she had a custom-made Yankees pinstripe dress with her name on it. Yeah. How did that come together so quickly?
Listen. The women in baseball, they can find the attire quickly. It's called shout out Tiny Turnip. That's the company. They pretty much just made kids' clothes tailored to MLB, or I'm pretty sure they do anything, but they seem to have, like, the MLB licensing for it, and they can customize with names, daddy, whatever you want, you know, player's last name. It's endless. It's endless.
They crushed it.
Oh, I have so I should have brought the I should have just left a rack of Tiny Turnip right here, just like my kids' clothes.
Yeah, today's episode is brought to you by Tiny Turnip.
Outclassing you. I mean, Bo looked great too.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
This is a very common kind of experience, maybe challenge for athletes with small children signing big contracts on television, is that you want your family to be there and the kids to be in the room. But, like, how much confidence did you have as you sat down that Bo and Willow were going to make it through that whole... Okay, zero.
I was like, okay, Bo has no shot. Like, negative chance. Anyway, we're setting him up for failure because, first off, you pry him from his mother's arms and take him into the room before, and he's like... And then within four... I mean, Jake, you were there. Within 20 seconds, he's screaming like... Mama! Yeah.
And he didn't even make it to get in the room.
No. I knew that was going to happen. I was like, this is a bad idea. We should walk in with them. But all right. And he was just freaking out. So he went running and whatever. And her dad took him. And we sat down. And Willow's sitting in front of us. And I'm like, this is just bad. You're setting him up for failure right now. And sure enough, like, within 4 minutes, she had to leave.
I thought, all things considered, Willow did a pretty good job.
Yeah, Willow's a good child. Like, she's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, but Bo's a boy, as you know.
He's a menace.
Oh, man. You should see him on planes.
Were you like that as a kid?
I don't know. I not that I know of. Apparently, at like 3, I kind of got a little crazy. But, I mean, he's not even 2 yet.
He's making his presence known, and then with the pictures after, you know,
he's an entertainer. He's 100% entertainer. He wants, like, everyone to look at him and, like, look what I'm doing. Aha, it's funny. Well, that's kind of
but guess what? It works. Cute kids is like the 100%. Fastest way to a fan base's heart. I mean, you haven't thrown a damn pitch, and the Yankees fans are like, this is the greatest family, the cutest family we've ever seen. So congratulations to Bo and Willow for really carrying the load there.
I hope they boo my kids too, which is fine. it's part of it.
Well, if your kids don't pitch well, they'll boo you. That's just kind of the pact.
It's just how it goes. That's how it works.
Right. Yesterday was the most media I'm sure you've ever done in one day, at least since the day you got drafted.
Yeah.
And you are our friend, and, like, we talk to you all the time, and we know that, like, you will talk. But in that type of scenario, most people, it's pretty overwhelming, like, to stand up there. And you walked up there and you said, I'm not a man of many words, which is true. And, like, you handled it totally fine, and A+ to you. But the experience of standing in front of those cameras with all these people, like, what was that like for you?
Yeah, you sit there and Levine has his flashcards. He's he's got everything prepared, and he did a great job, obviously. And he's spitting introducing
fire.
Oh
spitting
yeah
fire.
Yeah, they're introducing like everyone to his left and all these things, and it's like you have a keynote speaker, then you have another speaker. It's just like, this is, I'm like, what is this? This is so formal, which I mean, right. I understand, right? Like, this is like really formal. And then Boone finally introduces me, and in the moment I'm like sitting at the thing, I'm like, I'm not nervous at all. Like, I have no, I'm sitting there, I'm not even going over what I'm gonna say. Like, I have no idea what I'm gonna say, but I was like, all right, whatever, it'll hit me when I get up there. And then I walk around, I get in front of the podium, and I stand there, and I'm like, oh shit. I'm like, whoa, okay. I was like, it changed. Like, my perspective changed so fast. I'm like, holy crap. There's like 9-10 cameras staring at me right now, and I didn't write anything down. So here we go.
Well, it's so funny, right?
Because like, oh.
you pitch in front of that many, way more people than that all the time, right?
Yeah,
but like,
oh, yeah.
You're very comfortable pitching in front of a large crowd.
Yeah, but talking in front of like 40 people is like a total. I mean, I was, there was like some nerves in my voice because I was like, oh crap, like I didn't prepare anything. I didn't know if I had to, but
right.
I was like, okay, I'm just going to say thank you to a few people, and that's about it. Like, it's not going to be anything crazy. I'm not Aaron Judge, like, you know, it's an honor to be named captain, which was like, it was awesome to listen to what Aaron had to say. Like, it was really cool.
Yeah.
Much deserved.
You should have said that. You should have gone up there and just been like, it's an honor to be named the 17th captain of the New York Yankees. I got a phone call from Aaron last night. He was honored, but he's gonna pass it off to
he was me. Just so excited. Matt Blake was just so amped that he just override yeah. the
They're
judge
like,
captaincy.
You know what, they've never done a pitcher, probably not. It's the changing of the tide, so we're gonna
this
do
is
now.
The one. Don't tell. So, don't tell Garrett. Don't tell Garrett.
I want to ask you about Judge. I want to ask you about Judge. So, like, your both of you being on the Yankees now, like together, it's intertwined in some way, and like your experience of doing the press conference the day after him, right, is kind of wild. Yeah. So let's just your experience of joining the Yankees, of agreeing to sign with the Yankees, right? How much of that was contingent on Judge coming back?
I mean, it had a lot. I feel like it had a lot to do with it, right? So I think it shows that New York is really committed to, or the Yankees are really committed to winning. Like, they truly want. I mean, that's a lot. That's a freaking truckload of money they just gave to a guy, which is much deserved, right? AL MVP.
Right.
All, you know, our generation's home, our, you know, our, yeah, our generation's home run king. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's to be expected, and that's what I expect the New York Yankees to pay their homegrown, you know, star, like pretty much the face of baseball, or one of the faces of baseball, between Ohtani and Trout, and obviously we all know Aaron Judge,
right? And Danny Mendick,
and Danny Mendick as right. well, which is a good friend of mine. So don't make fun of him like that.
I wasn't. I was just
I'll take offense to that.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, so, Danny. Shout out, so, Danny, New York Met.
Shout out, Danny. There you go, New York.
You guys get lunch.
No, but it had an impact on me coming to play for the New York Yankees, mm-hmm. for sure.
And Cashman, right? I mean, both Cashman and Howe talked about before they signed Judge. It's just like, yes, Judge is number one priority, but like, part of it is we need to show him too. Like, we're not messing around. We got to get better than last year. And it seems like this was another theme of the presser, which I thought was interesting. We'd sort of hear reports about that, is that they've wanted you to be a Yankee for a while.
Yeah. That's kind of what I got from a while ago. I heard that.
So. Yeah. And you know, they were certainly never drafting high enough to consider taking you back in 2014. Cause you know, they were winning a bunch of games and whatnot. But no, I feel like that has to also feel good that this is a team that has clearly been wanting to try to trade for you. And then you know, it finally works out this year.
Yeah. It seems like they tried to make a move for me last year. It didn't work out at the deadline. As you guys know, there's so many moving parts, and we're not in, I wish we could be a fly. Like, I would love to be a fly on the wall. You know, the conversation between Farhan and Cashman, or, you know, whatever, the millions of conversations that go through the deadline, like, who knows what's said and what could happen. Like,
right.
I'm sure Otani's name is thrown around a million times, or is super close to getting traded in the last 2 years, or whatever, even Trout. which would be cool to be like, you know, just like be able to listen into that conversation. But that's the baseball fan of me, and obviously the baseball fan in you guys. But it seems
the Giants were like, "Yo, we'll do Carlos for Judge."
Yeah. we want Garrett. We want. They're like, "What you want to take
like,
on?
How much do you like Carlos? Let's find out. Let's really.
We
see
want
here.
Garrett, and we want you to take half the contract as well." We're like, "What?
What
asking for a lot?"
Yeah, so all that's right. Probably
I guess
why
they don't like you.
You ended up staying in San Francisco at the time. But I feel like that also is cool that it's like, I mean, listen, free agency is, as you clearly experienced for the first time, and you talked about this, how it's much different than last year, not just because of the lockout, but because you were coming off of a great season, but not one that was like fully healthy, fully convincing, fully in the same way that this past year was.
It was nice. It was nice to put together, you know, a full season of 31 starts. It kind of, you know, solidified that I can take the load of a season, right. And I think it opened up a lot of eyes and a lot of front office eyes, and they were interested it was vastly different than the year before, the interest for sure.
Clearly.
There's a lot more
the year before. Yeah. I mean, the year before, the narrative was like, oh, but can he do it again?
Yeah,
right. And then you did. And so you were paid accordingly. The last moment I want to ask you about from yesterday that cracked me up. So after you do the press conference on the dais, which is a word you hear.
Okay, yeah. Let's go ahead. Continue.
It's a word you only hear during press conferences. The dais. Like, it's a podium. Okay? It's a stage. It's a whatever. It's a bima, Jordan.
Yes.
After that, they do like breakout sessions where it's like, Boone in a room with Cashman and the print media, and Carlos does like MLB Network, and it just all goes around. And it ends up, what ends up happening is Boris was there yesterday, and Boris was basically on like Correa duty. And so all of the national media, right, went to Boris, and not a single question about are Carlos Rodon was asked to Boris in a 30-minute presser. But we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
You go into the room with the New York media, and you're asked some question about like, who you rooted for growing up and like what teams you liked. And you referenced the 2004 Red Sox.
Oh, I know. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that.
Oops. Undo, backspace.
I was like, hold on. How do I maneuver this?
You're like, control Z.
Hold on, you guys. Let's start over. Can we start over?
That was awesome.
Run it back.
They're like, so you were a Red Sox fan? I was like, no.
So someone was like, so you're saying you rooted for the Red Sox in 04. Those are the exact words.
And the way you
handled it was great.
I was like, wait, hold on. I was like, any guy my age, the same age, was 12 years old in 2004. Everybody loves an underdog. We all know the Red Sox hadn't run in 100 and something years.
Yeah.
Who wasn't?
Yeah.
Like pulling for the Red Sox a little bit.
But you were like, you said, dude, I was a kid. And then he laughed and you were like, we're going to do this already? Come on.
it's like, you and I are going to have a problem. Yeah.
Well, it was like, funny.
I went to Carolina. I was like, what?
I was like,
you know, we really are going to have a problem.
Yeah. Well, it was funny too, because when you finish your very eloquent prepared remarks at the dais, and you only got a few questions, and you were like, oh, that was easy. I was like, my guy, you're in for another hour of this. Like, this is not over. You are not out of the woods yet.
No, I knew it wasn't over, but
of course.
The funniest thing about the dais, when he kept saying the dais, and I'm like, all right, hold on, man. I need my dictionaries. I don't even know what a dais is. And then obviously now the answer, it's been answered for me. It's the damn podium. It's not. Why do they call it a dais?
They're like, Carlos, come to the dais. You're like, where's that? Where do I go?
I'm just walking around behind the screen.
You're like trying to. Like,
no.
Is that a Yankee thing? Is it like a New York local word? The dais?
Yeah,
I'll have a chopped cheese and a dais.
Yeah. So, sounds like a sandwich.
It does. So I want to also kind of jump back because, you know, a lot of the press are talking about, all right, this is any Yankees press conference or any big city. Oh, is he ready for the big city? He wants to pitch in New York. Okay, he can handle these big stages. And also a lot of the reporting leading up to this was, oh, he's a, you know, Miami native. And he's, and that starts to paint a picture for someone who doesn't know you. Miami native who's like, loves to pitch in New York, wants to, like, that can be true in some ways. But also, as we talked to you, again, as I mentioned earlier, in your ranch in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, yeah. having grown up mostly in North Carolina, like
you are a
country boy. Is that safe to say?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like the city, but yeah, yeah. I would. Where I live, people would say, yeah, you're a country person.
Yeah.
You don't just like, oh, I'm just going to end up here. We'll be all right. An hour from Indianapolis. We'll get there.
You have to opt in to where you
yeah,
live
you're opting in. You're opting into where you're at right now.
Carlos
where
I'm is
at
in
right
the,
now, at least.
You're in the undisclosed location when they do like the State of the Union and they break like one of the
yeah, you're
the
in the bunker right now.
The
what
interior.
We're looking at looks like a. Looks yeah. like a
I could be near
bunker.
One of those silos. I have no idea. That's yeah, where I really could be.
But to set the record straight, like yeah. when you hear the word Miami native in a baseball context, yeah. it has a certain connotation. And I'm not saying it's better or worse or negative or whatever. But
yeah,
like,
you
think of like Nick Castellanos and like Manny Machado,
sure.
and Eric Hosmer.
For sure. And I'll say this. I was born in Miami, but I'm not a Miami native. I grew up. Like you said, I grew up in yeah. Raleigh, North Carolina. I played high school baseball in outside of Raleigh. So right. I would say, if anything, I was a Raleigh native, but now I live in Indiana.
Right.
Because that's where my wife's family's from. So not a Miami native. We get to clarify this. A lot yes. of confusion going on.
Yeah. And listen, you of course, you still have family there, right? You
for
have,
sure,
do,
yeah.
do have Cuban roots. It's not like you're disowning Miami.
No,
it's just,
not at
it's
all.
It's not painting the right picture of the kind of person that Carlos is.
Yeah.
We just kept laughing at that all off season.
Here's what I'll say, and I don't mean this in a negative way. You don't have any tattoos.
No, not yet.
Right? that's kind Hopefully. Of the, when, like Miami native, I'm like, this guy is tatted.
He's got a neck tat.
He's got it all.
Who knows
he's
what he has.
All. Yeah. But yeah, you are the much more of the hunting and fishing type as we
for sure
as we know.
So outdoorsman.
Yes, let's ask you about that now. So your typical off season, how many days a week are you outdoors doing outdoorsman stuff, either hunting?
It depends on the time of year.
Yeah,
it depends on the time of year. Like the beginning of November is probably the best time to be out in the woods and just enjoying the deer life. I mean, honestly, it's fun. I'm not shooting like 100 deer. I shoot one deer a year. And just so everyone knows, I mean, I know you guys know, but people listening in or watching, like hunting, there's a lot more to hunting than just shooting something. So at least for me, and that goes for a lot of hunters as well. So I don't go out there. I want to disclose that. I don't go out there every day and shoot a deer. No, I shoot one deer a year.
Right.
Depending
you're Cuban,
on the state.
You're not Cuban Rambo.
No. I watch a lot of animals, which is a lot of fun.
So there you go. So what you're into, what, because as you mentioned, like you are living on a pretty large plot of land where you can see some stuff, right?
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
not necessarily out there just always.
No. Yeah, you're always gonna rifle, see something. Right. You never right. know what you're gonna see, which is cool.
Now you're probably,
but yeah, go ahead, yeah. sorry.
I was just gonna say you're running out there now when it's negative 10 degrees. But
no,
November,
yeah, November's great. November is like their breeding time of the year, all of November. But I try to get done. I mean, things have changed for me. I don't spend quite as much time as I used to in the woods and, you know, with kids and in the family and, you know, this thing called baseball. So yeah, I know it's my downtime in the beginning of November, and then, you know, things kind of get serious, especially, you know, now there's really no time to do much at all, except just get ready for baseball, ready for the season and be dad. But yeah, it's negative 10 degrees today. It's not exactly the best time to go out, but yeah, that's kind of, you know, my fall. Like this fall we got a boat, so we went fishing, took the cousins out in October. It was still warm, so we went out a few times and had some fun with that. But yeah, a lot of my stuff's just we stay at home, and whether we hunt or eat dinner, and, you know, normal boring country life.
Well, that's the thing. I you know, like, that's where you find your peace.
Yeah,
and I think
that's where it is.
That's we all find our peace in different ways. I find it on a bike. Jordan,
yeah, I enjoy that too.
Jordan finds it on Fangraphs.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I was gonna say too that this is finding your peace will be all the more important now as you become a very important pitcher for the New York Yankees. It's
yeah.
not that it was not true before, of course, with the White Sox and Giants. But yeah, I mean, I imagine it'll be a nice retreat both where either during the season and after the season.
Let's turn the clock back, if you don't
mind. Let's do it.
2 years ago, around this time, 2 years and like 2 months ago, was like bottom for you as a professional athlete, right?
Yeah.
The White Sox non-tender you. You're a free agent. You're a bust. I mean, injuries played a role in that. But at that time, like, you had not become what you were expected to be. So looking back from where you're sitting now to where you were 2 years ago, like, first, walk us through that moment 2 years ago when you were kind of at bottom of kind of doubting where you were.
I was like, there's a closet, like, right over there. It's my hunting closet. And I think it was like November. Like right around there somewhere. No, it's back this way. And Rick Hahn calls me and he's like, "Hey, Los." I'm like, "Hey, what's up, man?" You know, not knowing the time of year it is. And I'm like, "What's going on? Everything good?" And he's like, "Oh, you know, just calling, you know, we're gonna non-tender you." And I was like, "Oh." I was like, "Okay. All right, I understand it's," and this I think this is what I said verbatim. I was like, "It's a business decision, and I totally understand what you guys need to do." And he's like, "Hey, we want to bring you back. Don't think that we don't want you. We just, you know, it's just a better decision for us, and we just think that this is what we need to do." And I was like, "Okay, totally fine." And I hung up, and I was like, "Shit!" Like, that's my first initial thought. Right. And then I called Scott, and he was like, "Oh wow," because I think we talked about it prior to then. He was like, "There's no way they non-tender you." And they didn't, and you know, whatever. And it was actually for the better. So I ended up being a White Sox anyways, as you guys know, signed for $3 million. Nothing to snarl at. Anybody's going to play baseball for that kind of money. And, you know, the rest was history.
But that moment gave you a bit of a kick in the pants, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure. It was just one of those things like, oh, they don't want me anymore. Not that they didn't want me. They just didn't believe in me like they once had, and that's okay. It kind of put a lot more things into perspective, and let me focus a lot more on what I needed to do.
So
that's good.
From then to, and you know, a lot's been written about so much of that. Of course, was injury related and getting fully healthy and getting prepared. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if you could break down kind of like a pie chart of like what you could most attribute to your success now.
You guys love pie charts.
We do love pie charts. Big pie chart, guys.
We're nerds.
Jake, Jake, you want to make one in the while I'm speaking about it, or are we just gonna?
I got you.
Jake will do this. Okay. So between like getting fully healthy and understanding your body, just straight confidence of like being a good major league pitcher, and actually like changing something about the way you were pitching, your repertoire, your delivery, and stuff like that. As far as getting from that point, that low point 2 years ago, to now being one of the best pitchers in the league and signing with the Yankees, what's that breakdown of
I think
of that,
yeah, I think
that change?
I'll just do the timeline. I think it started, the first thing that needed to happen was like getting my body feeling the right way. Mm-hmm. And it was just, coming off 2020, it was one of those things like, you know, I was tired. I didn't feel great getting through that first year of Tommy John. And it was just like a crazy season to maneuver, right? Like,
yes.
I look back and I think about it. Like, I remember being in spring training, like everything was going good. Like, I did everything I needed to do to be ready that off season. I was in there every day in 19.
19,
the winter of 19. Mm-hmm. Man, I drive to Pro-X almost every day. That's an hour there, hour back. And I'd go, and I'd still be able to, you know, make it back. If I wanted to hunt the evenings, I'd get back and hunt evenings too. But I started in, you know, I'd have the TJ, I can't remember. I was in October. I was there every day, every month, October to through January. I was in, you know, I was ready. I was prepared. But then, and then it turned in, because it's Tommy John, like the rehabilitation of Tommy John, there's certain points where you start throwing, it's like, you know, I don't remember the marks, like 6 months or 5 months you start throwing and stuff, which I started like the light throwing before I got to spring training, mm-hmm. I think, or maybe when I first got there. And then the whole COVID thing happened, what, at the end of spring training, right?
Middle, yeah, first week.
Middle of spring training, and everyone was sent home, and I was like, screw it, I'm staying here in Arizona. And luckily, like, I still got to do stuff there. I still got to, you know, work a little bit in Arizona, but eventually it just turned crazy, right? Everything locked down. And then it was like, I got to go like 3 days a week in the middle, you know, in May and June. And at that time I needed to throw every day,
right?
But I had nobody to throw with.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I had to do. And like, I had to go in July and they're like, hey, can you, you know, we're going to give you the five spot. Can you do this? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Oh, why wouldn't I? I'm going to grind for the boys. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to freaking go. And sure enough, I go first game against Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, I'm throwing like 86 miles an hour. Why? Because I was throwing freaking 3 days a week from June to July.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I look back at it, I'm like, this is stupid. I mean, but those were the cards that were dealt. So it was what it was. So, I mean.
Well, and it's frustrating because like when you get TJ or you get any surgery, you're given steps. Right. You're given rehab steps. And
my steps were crazy, man.
Right. And you're told that if you accomplish these steps and you do what you're supposed to do, you will get back to where you were. Right.
Yeah.
But you didn't have the opportunity to even do that. Right.
No, I mean, I expected in the moment I was like, I expected more. Like I was throwing hard. Like I knew I was throwing hard. And then sure enough, I'd throw in like these sim games and stuff. Like, yeah, I was be able to compete, but I was throwing hard and getting outs, and I'd get, you know, it was kind of like that, you know, how I pitched before. But it was better, which was reassuring. I was like, man, I could still do this. But as soon as I got in like into regular battle, it was just like, it was so much. I was trying to do so much, like my body couldn't handle it. And I look back now, like, yeah, no shit, it's not gonna work. Excuse my language. Like, yeah, you're not, of course you're not gonna be able to stay healthy. You didn't build the volume up right. You didn't build everything up right. So the biggest thing for me was after that, like, yeah, it makes sense why I sucked. I wasn't built up right. And a lot of things mechanically weren't exactly right as well. So then I got into that winter and I went back to Pro X. That was a winter of 2020, and we got back to the drawing board, and I'm like, can you like fix me? You guys helped me get to where I need to be. And we started scratching the surface with that. And then eventually like it got to where we got to Chicago, or no, where was it? Yeah, it was Chicago. That's where I got non-tendered. I got to Chicago and you got to working back with Ethan Katz. I was talking to Ethan before I got non-tendered, and I was like really excited to work with him because we started talking about a few things that I needed to work on.
Right.
And I was working on those, and then I got non-tendered and we couldn't really talk. And then I finally signed back, and then we just like hit the ground running with it.
And the fact and that you,
that's then, where it really started.
You just mentioned like 2020, you're barely built up. You're not ready, but of course you're going to try. And the 2020 season, still, we do not grasp how ridiculous it was on so many levels, how much it impacted so many players. We've been talking about the people this even still now, like how ridiculous that season was. That's still having lasting effects on players at different levels. And yet then you figure it out, you go crazy hard that offseason, and in 2021, you're throwing 100 miles an hour, which is not 86 miles an hour.
Yeah. I mean, it changed quick. I mean, a lot of things went into that, just like a revamp in mechanics, kind of getting back to how I threw in college, but obviously a little twist to it, and using my body efficiently when I pitch, which is just better for my body, my arm, and everything, my mental state. To be able to repeat my delivery and know that, you know, it's pretty stress free when I'm on the mound pitching and throwing 100 pitches, you know, every start. And, you know, that attests to a lot of people that helped me along the way, the people at Pro X, and obviously Ethan Katz as well with the White Sox. We use the core velocity belt. A lot of people use that now. And a lot of people don't know how to use it. And you can use it a lot of different ways. So. Get educated. If kids out there trying to use the core velocity belt, put it on. There's Lance Wheeler who kind of came up with it. He knows a lot of information, a lot of stuff that he can teach you to use it. So
call Carlos before you use it.
Don't call me. I only know how to use it for guys that throw four seamers high up in the zone. I don't know.
Very specific.
Yeah.
The thing with your mechanics though is like, what separates you as an athlete, right? Is your huge ass. And your big legs.
Thanks.
Right? Like that's Like, actually,
yeah, no,
like,
yeah, that's, for
you
sure.
Look at Carlos on the mound, you're like, that guy's got a really strong, big lower half. And yeah, it felt like in Chicago for those first couple of years, like, you weren't using that in the same way that you were in college.
Yeah, I think that the difference in the beginning of my career was, like, I was trying to, the game's about results, right? This game, results are over everything. Sorry, I cut you off, but I figured I'd start talking about it.
You're the guest. Go ahead.
So some things, if anything gets in the way of the results, whether it's, who knows what it is, but we'll just say, you know, if I'm producing results and they might not be as good as, at the time, as good as Chris Sale, but they're better than a lot of other guys, why would we change anything? Like, why, if it's not broke, don't fix it. That's kind of, that kind of was the quote there, you know?
And then we're not going to,
if it's working, yeah, but it was broke and it broke. And I didn't know. So I was young. I didn't know, you know?
Yeah.
And putting it back together, how much credit do you give to your wife, Ashley?
Well, thanks for bringing it up. I mean, my wife held the ship together for a while. The Tommy John was definitely tough. Not being able to play for a year and a half and then trying to do it super fast. But she was always supportive. She's the one that got the rehabilitation train built, pretty much. What goes into everything I do throughout a season and in an off season, the resources I need, that goes all to my wife, because she's the one that, she's a really good planner, and she schedules all that. She gets everything, like, where it needs to be, where people need to be, you know, all the moving parts. She's kind of like the secretary, but I can't call her the boss, because then I, you know, my position goes down. And
you did yesterday.
Yeah. Well, she is. Yeah. So, but it's okay.
And then she was also the one that was like, "Hey, we're gonna go 65% fastballs this year, man."
Yeah, she said, "Yeah, we're gonna dump the changeup and we're gonna do slider, and you can start throwing a curveball." So she's my real pitching coach.
I see. Sorry, Andrew Bailey.
My favorite story, I remember, like, I think I wrote about this, I talked to you about it last year, was the day after you got non-tendered, you were scheduled to go on vacation to the Caribbean. And
yeah, you guys were in trouble for that. That's a sour spot. You want to bring this up? Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, like, in that moment, there's no good options. Like, you're either going to the Caribbean and you're having a terrible time, right?
Because it just wasn't worth it for me.
Right. And so you guys stayed at home and you just picked up a baseball and threw it into a net.
That sounds more barbaric than what actually happened, but I was motivated. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
Barbaric is a funny way to frame that. It does make it, now I'm picturing, right, like the, you know, the Rocky montage of, like, I can't.
It's like, oh, there's the freaking cow ribs and he's going to punch him.
Like, what? Yeah, he's mad. He's angry. Gonna figure this out. They go vacation for Carlos.
It's just like me training for like a 40-second clip, and then it's black screen, and then it's like me versus Apollo and we're in the ring. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
It was just like,
except the you versus Apollo. The you versus Apollo is that pitch in spring training 2021 where you threw the fastball by Manny Machado.
And you were like, oh.
Fastball, but I'm like,
oh. Yeah, like, oh, I figured something out here. Because
Manny got me last year. Well, but I got him.
Well, he's pretty good. It's okay.
He's good. He's good.
It happens. Well, because again, like, I mean, I joke about the pitch mix, and I know people asked you about this yesterday too, but I am interested in I know you've talked about wanting to bring back the changeup, but in the fastball versus slider, because you've been known for your slider for 10 years, right?
For sure, yeah.
And it's
still
really good. But at some point in the last couple of years, you're like, actually, my fastball might be even better than that. Like, that's got to be kind of a weird but cool feeling, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I guess as I get older, I throw harder. Hopefully it keeps going, but that'd be cool, right?
That didn't happen to me.
No, it didn't happen to you. I was done. What's done is done, Dad.
let's turn the clock back one last time. So,
okay.
No offense to the White Sox or the Giants or whatever, and I know you had a good time at both of those places, but besides your incredibly bizarre postseason outings with the White Sox, which were both very weird in 2020 and 2021.
They were odd.
Very odd. We don't have to get into either of those.
My postseason experience is just
super weird.
It's not there.
But
I don't really have any.
That's not totally true, though.
Right. The last normal experience you had pitching in an incredibly meaningful game as a healthy athlete was the 2013 World Series, college World Series, right? In Omaha, where you had two starts, and that was your sophomore year. Your junior year, you guys went one and done in the ACC tournament, and it was a disappointing season. And I'm sure you remember that.
Yeah, I remember that.
But what I'm interested in is, like, you're the type of dude who wants that type of moment, who loves that type of moment, who, like, gets fired up for that. And the idea, I'm curious to hear from you, like, it's been so long since the best version of you had a legitimate opportunity to pitch in that type of stage. And to be at Yankee Stadium yesterday when it was cold, right? Where, like, that's what it is in October.
44.
Was that sweet?
Yeah. I mean, that's, you're going to see your breath and somehow, what is it? What does that stadium hold? 55, 56,000 probably?
It's a lot of people. It's a lot of people.
They're going to freeze their butts off, but they'll be out there. Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, they had the football field and the freaking goalpost in the way. And we have Minnesota versus Syracuse. No offense to either school, but
come on. So you couldn't take any pictures because it was a football field?
Jake's laughing.
Oh, no.
Minnesota versus Syracuse. What do you got on that, Jake?
What's the line on that?
I don't know. I don't care. I wouldn't even bet on it.
But that's what I'm saying.
I don't even bet, but if I was a bettor, I'd be like, no. I don't want to watch that game. No offense.
You didn't get to take pictures, like, on the field because it was a football field?
No, I mean, they did, but they had, like, the tarp. They were putting the turf and all the stuff out. It was about to rain.
That's goofy.
It was raining. But needless to say, very, very cool experience. It's a lot funner to pitch on that mound instead of stand there and look at the two goalposts in your face. But
also, how about that home locker room?
It was changed into freaking football.
Oh, dude. So you haven't even get to go down there.
I didn't even get
yet.
To. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's fine. I'm going to have 81. Sorry. I'm going to have like 400 and something games there.
Yeah. You will have plenty of time in that locker room. But it is funny that you didn't really get the full experience. But to Jake's point, that is the thing. And sure, you know, the 29 other fan bases can roll their eyes, but the Yankees and I guess the Dodgers have gotten to that point, but it's really only them over the last
The Dodgers, they have nice. It's nice, but it's old.
No.
They need to redo it.
Oh, no. Well, you're right about the clubhouse. I'm talking about basically guaranteed you're going to be in the postseason. In terms of, like, you're going somewhere where there's basically almost 1,000% chance that in September and then likely October,
for sure,
you'll be pitching.
Yeah, you're always going to have a chance. And, you know, and you're going to be in it.
That's really freaking cool. There's just not a lot of places you can do that.
I feel like it's a priceless thing. And that was one of the things where it's like, I'm gonna have the highest chance of winning a World Series anywhere. It'd probably be with the New York Yankees.
Yeah. It's true.
And that's the end goal.
Yeah.
And like Jordan and I and other fans, like, we roll our eyes sometimes at the Yankees exceptionalism.
Right?
Yeah, but there's a part of it that is real, right?
A lot of fans do that. Of course. It's just you're the most hated. You're the evil empire. You're the best. You have 27 world championships. What, like, people are gonna hate? That's just how it is. There's haters. Mm-hmm. If you ain't if you don't have haters, you ain't doing well. Is that not true? You gotta have haters, man.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
you're doing well
true.
If you have haters.
And you're obviously clearly equipped to do you. It's not like you were unaware of that when you showed up yesterday. And so I think
I'm all for it.
Yeah. Yeah. It clearly drives you. And I think that's.
It makes it fun.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, too, thinking back to those times in Omaha, I mean, your postseason performances, also freshman year, right? Like, you clearly were enjoying pitching against North Carolina,
sure,
too, right? I mean, these were huge games against huge rivals in huge situations. We got super regionals, we got in Omaha, and you were like, yeah, let's do it. I'm going CG in Omaha, no problem. Let's do it. You know, it's a little less realistic in Major League Baseball in 2023.
Yeah.
But hey, maybe Boone will let you throw 133 pitches. I know you joked yesterday about, you know, how you're mad.
Here's your problem. It'll be like game five, and it's like, we're going to need to cut you at like 112 because game seven, we need you to come in like the seventh.
Exactly.
Love that.
It's like, oh my God.
quick takeaway from the last 2 days, and then we'll spin it forward. Boone is so happy right now. as he should be, like seeing his vibe. So I was there at the winter meetings when it was the day that the arson judge
Giants
shit went down, mm-hmm. and Boone's press conference with the media, I think, was like 4 hours later.
It was like right after. Yeah,
it was like right. He was clearly rattled, understandably. Like he said he got out of the shower, checked his phone, saw Judge to the Giants, called Cashman. Cashman called Judge's agent, said it wasn't true. They called Boone back. Everything was chill. But Boone, like at that press conference, you could tell in his eyes, like he was worried. He's like, okay, well, if we don't get Judge, then what are we gonna do? Like these last 2 days, that man is so happy. And I understandably, because he genuinely believed that he was gonna have to manage the New York Yankees in 2023 without Aaron Judge, which potentially means no Carlos Rodon, which, you know, and here he is in this reality where he's like, all right, here we go. Like it was so funny and so cool to see him, like, because it made him appreciate it more clearly, because he didn't think it was gonna happen. Right.
Yeah, that's great. Just crazy. That just the turn of events for Mr. Boone.
He's
great, by the way.
Oh yeah, and he and who, still a lot of offseason left for Yankees to continue to add.
So yeah, I don't know what they're. Hopefully we do something. Go ahead. Sorry.
There you go.
I'm a free agent.
You got the we on now that the contract signed. We're in full we mode, which is good. Here's the last thing I really, really want to ask you about. And it's something that we've admittedly, you know, talked a little bit about off the air, but I do think people will appreciate some insight here. Scott Boras has been in your life for a while, right?
Yeah, since I was 18.
So there you go. So he has been your agent, advisor, attorney. I love how he likes to be introduced as an attorney. He always says that. Apparently, he's very particular about, I am a sports attorney, or a baseball attorney, not an agent, which is hilarious. But so you know Scott, look, he has a lot of very high profile clients. But for you, seen him and kind of grown up with him in this game, just give us a sense of like what he's actually like, because I think he has become so much more famous over the course of your career.
I know,
right?
He has, hasn't
and,
he?
And especially these last, you know, 4 or 5 off seasons. So just give us some insight into like what he's actually like when he's
Scott
not
Boras.
Talking to cameras and whatnot.
Scott Boras. How do I explain Scott? I've had dinner with Scott a lot of times, right? And it's always it's good. It's never, you know, at a younger age, a lot. My first conversation with Scott, and this is some insight. My first conversation with Scott, we were in Raleigh, and it was me, my parents, and Elliot Avent sitting next to me, and Scott. Yeah. Scott was sitting next to me here, and I forgot who else. I don't know, but I just remember he looked at me and he's like, "Hey, one thing I want to talk to you about." And I was like, "Oh, here we go. I'm 18 or 19 year old kid." I'm like, "Okay." He's because this was like me trying to make a decision of who I wanted to represent me or an advisor, right? Mm-hmm. At the time, you can't call him your agent, you call him your advisor.
Right.
So, but knowing that I had someone, I was trying to make that decision. And he said, "I think you should stop hitting." And I was, I was 19 and hard-headed, and I looked at him and I said, "I'm probably not gonna stop hitting." And I just remember telling him, I'm like, I was like mad, I was mad in the moment.
Like, what is this guy?
Who the hell is this guy? And why is he telling me not to hit anymore? I really enjoy it. I'm a kid, like, you know. I look back, I'm like, I was a kid, I wanted to have fun, I wanted to win. And he's just like, "Well, we just need to, you know, manage what you do with your hitting, because, you know, your pitching's obviously what's going to get you to where you want to be." And I looked at him and I was like, "First of all, I didn't say anything, but in my head I'm like, "There's no we yet. I don't know what you're talking about." And I remember Elliot sitting there and he's just like, "What the fuck?" He's like, "I can't believe this kid is saying this to him." But I think Scott kind of got an understanding of who I was, I guess, or my personality was. But and after all that, I was just like, "You know what, Scott, I do want you to be my representation, but I'm still going to hit." And that was like our first conversation. He was like, okay. But, you know, there's a lot of conversations. Sometimes there's like guidance. But you know, it's just like chit chat. You know, I ask them, now it's like, I ask them like about, you know, what's going on? What's the free agency like, you know, all that stupid stuff. And because I'm a fan too, but
yeah,
he can only say so much. He's not going to disclose anything.
Right.
Sure.
It's funny, right? Because every fan wants to pick up the phone, call Scott Boras and say, what the fuck happened with Correa? But like,
yeah, well,
like,
yeah.
You know, he's probably not telling anybody, including you, but you can actually ask him that question. Now, what struck me about that story you just told, Carlos, is like that day where you met him, Boras could envision yesterday, the day you had yesterday, where you were for sitting sure. up there clean shaven with children.
Probably
being handed.
That's probably what he was looking for.
Right.
You think that's what he does? Like, he's like, what is this going to look like? In
yeah.
But he's years? Usually right.
Because he yeah. saw it before you saw it, dude.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, he knew. Yeah, I mean, he clearly knew. But yeah, it's cool. I do, like, unlike most people think, especially in this, you know, in this industry, they think that you don't talk to Scott Boras or have conversations, or like he doesn't, you know, speak to his players, which is totally false, because I've had, obviously, in the last few weeks, I've had various amount of phone calls with Scott. But even when I wasn't going through free agency or anything, and yeah, there's phone calls there. We talk. You actually talk right. to him.
I remember at one point during your free agency, you texted us like, I can't get a hold of Scott. And Jordan and I were like, he's at the Nimmo presser, dude. Like,
I know. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
He's on the day.
You guys sent him the video. It's him with Nimmo next to him.
Yeah. It's and like, hey, maybe this is why he's not answering.
Oh, and then he was at the Red Sox one
at
with
Yoshida.
What's his name? Yoshida.
Yeah, he was at Yoshida 4 hours later. But that also kind of goes to like he's showing up, right? I mean, he's all over the place.
He's there. I mean, that's his thing, though. Like, he loves that.
I know.
I understand. Him. It's this thing, man. It's like his Super Bowl, right? Like he's sitting there. He's like, I got it done, and you know that's his trophy, and it makes sense. You know, I understand.
Yeah,
get it.
Yeah, he's one so of a kind, man.
He's one so of a kind. One of a kind. Yes.
Okay. I have two more things I want to ask you, and then we'll let you go. Number one, New York City. So whether or not you end up living in New York City remains to be seen. I'm not going to divulge your exact address, but you know, I've lived in New York City now for 5 years, and I just want to open the floor up to you, Carlos. Like, do you have any questions about living in the busiest city in the world? Like, is there anything you're concerned about? Anything you need to know? I mean, we live in very different tax brackets, but you know, I still think I can help and of service to you.
I heard Upper East Side.
That's not where I live, but that is a neighborhood. Yeah.
Where do you live?
I live in Harlem.
Oh, Harlem.
Yeah, I live in Harlem. I can walk. Harlem, to
Harlem's up and coming though.
Yeah, you come by, man.
He's right there. He's a short walk from Yankee Stadium. So there you go.
You ever have a late night game and you don't feel
how
like
how far are you from the Apollo Theater?
About a 6 minute walk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any New York questions? Anything you need to know?
No.
All right.
I'm not a tourist.
I'm
asking
native.
For directions.
The native now.
Can we get
how
you say,
do I get to?
Carlos is on the 4 train. Excuse me, where's Yankee Stadium?
How do I get to Yankee Stadium?
I can't wait for you to actually hear the bing bong.
Then just go, get out of here.
You can't wait for the first New Yorker to tell you to fuck off. Oh, that's when they really welcomed you.
You know, it'll happen and I'll stop and I'll be like, hold on, let me get my phone out. Can you do that again? I'm going to film
it. Hold on. I just want to like make it clear that I am in New York now. And you
it was
told me? This.
You told me to do it? Okay.
Last thing.
Yes.
So our relationship with you, our friendship with you was, the origin of that is really the perfect sitter that you achieved, I believe, your junior year.
That's a true story.
That is a true story, and we're going to ask you to tell it. Carlos, what is a perfect sitter?
Oh, man. So, 9-inning game, for those of you wondering if you guys want all the rules and regulations. 9-inning game, one spot, no moving at any time. No standing, no nothing. You're sitting the whole time. Seriously, you're in one spot, you're sitting the whole time. You can't get water, you can't go pee, Nope. You can't do nothing. There's
can't
nothing.
Stand up to high five your teammates.
No, you're in the one spot.
Okay, so you achieved this.
You have to pick it. Listen, this is strategic because
guys
are scoring runs, things are happening. You have to be near a spot where the guys that score runs, they walk in so you can just high five without moving.
Exactly.
And at NC State, we had a bench there and with a railing, and I'd always sit there anyways, and I'd sit there in the corner, and I could just stick out my hand, man.
So have you attempted one of these since you've been in Pro Bowl?
No chance.
So
I mean,
I
have a better chance of doing it now than I did because I could have been into pinch hit, but somehow that day.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Do we think this is possible to pull off as a New York Yankee? Because we've thought the perfect sitter has sat with us since you told us about it. I know Jake attempted it in college several times, I think successfully, at least once. So you've inspired certainly a generation of just at least
it's a real
Jake
thing.
Jordan. So do you think it's possible in Pro Bowl? And if so, why or why not?
Well, I mean, it's one of those things again, it's going to be really hard because you have to be strategic of where you sit. And as we know, the manager sits closest or stands closest to where the batsmen and the runners when they come into the dugout.
Boone's a big stand. He I'm stands,
sorry.
Though.
I'm sorry. Did you just say batsman?
Yeah. What is this?
1908?
The batsman.
The batsman. Aaron Judge, one of the greatest batsmen in the league right now.
The way you could pull this off is to be Edwin Diaz and pitch like 3 days in a row.
It's easy for me. I just have to pick a spot somewhere where I can.
But it's not comfortable, dude. It's not dugouts, big league dugouts are not like you can't sit on the wooden bench for the whole time. Whereas if you're in the pen,
it is what it is.
If you're in the pen, it's padded, right?
It's the starter's the only one that's gonna be able to do it. Then they're never gonna ask me to pinch run. So
that's true. So there you go. Well, there's your challenge. We would love to see if you can pull this off, especially because Boone, you mentioned the manager. He's a stander.
Stander. Yes.
So he should. There should be some real estate to sit down, sort of close to the steps.
Yeah, but you don't want to be too close because then you're like a brown noser, you know? You're like, look at this guy freaking next to the coaches.
He's
a new guy just freaking up someone's butt, you know?
He's kissing ass.
Yeah.
Walking here. Well, forget about it.
Well, we're officially challenging you to perform perfect sitters in New York Yankee. Hopefully you can pull it off. You have many opportunities to do so. So hopefully you can do it. But Carlos, anything you want to plug? Where can people find your work?
My work?
Yeah, where can people find
you? Yeah, where can if they want to see
Twitch.tv. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, where can they watch you kind of do your thing?
Yes Network.
Yeah, every fifth day on Yes.
They already have a ton of money, but yeah, if you guys want to watch me, Yes Network.
Whew. All right, now they know where to find
you're not going
to
be able to find me.
also probably often
satellite,
often on ESPN, I would imagine. Now that you're on the Yankees, you will be on national television.
I do have social media. Mm-hmm. I don't use it that much, but Instagram, Twitter.
You can find Carlos on Yes Network or in the woods somewhere in Indiana. Yeah. Carlos, thank you for joining us. And above all, congratulations, because, without the risk of getting too sappy, it is legitimately really cool to see, for me to be there yesterday was really freaking cool. Like just to see you That's up there awesome. As an adult, like wearing this, I'm a real boy costume with the suit.
A real boy.
And yet you look exactly the same. As when we first
it is
you.
It's weird, it's full circle. You're like, holy crap, wait, you're 19 again, right?
And seriously, I
that's
was
like, I told Cash when I said, yeah, I should have shaved a while ago, so you guys thought I was like 25, but I got a couple more years, you know.
Well, honestly, I was like, it looked like you were getting drafted again. That is what I felt like I was watching yesterday. But now, as Jake said, yes,
Jake and right. I have to go eat some matzah.
Yes.
Is that April, right?
Yeah,
matzah is a
Passover, right?
Passover.
Yeah, Passover.
We'll I'm sure you can do some.
Jordan will join us. We'll go. Yeah. I need to go get my tuna.
Carlos, you joke about that. You joke about that, but I took you to. Yeah, I took
what was
you
that place?
To, The deli?
Yeah, what deli was that?
Sarge's.
Yeah, Sarge's. Great.
So you could find Carlos there. There you go. There's another place.
And Jake will be at Sarge's. Jake will be eating his matzah and butter.
I did. We went on.
He did. This big freaking saltine cracker.
Well, this was the best part of that. It was
the size of my face, dude.
It was on Passover, and I ate unkosher pastrami on the matzah with cheese.
That's just disrespectful on many levels.
Unbelievable.
I'm sure Carlos.
All right, well,
very
Carlos,
confused.
I'll catch you on the 4 train next week. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I'll be there. Well, Brian should be back up, so I'll text you.
Thank you, Carlos Rodon. Good luck being a New York Yankee, and we'll.
Thank you, guys. Grazie.
SiriusXM Podcasts.